Hello and welcome to another episode of the Steel Empire Podcast. Today, I'm going to talk about something that is pretty crazy. The married filing separate disaster that was reverted and changed out of nowhere. So that's pretty exciting. If you don't know what I'm talking about, consider yourself blessed. You might know that there was an American Federation of Teachers lawsuit that was filed against the administration because they were trying to force the administration to process IBR repayment applications. A lot of people have been sitting in the SAVE plan forbearance for far too long. People want to get onto something that gives them credit towards forgiveness and PSLF, right? The American Federation of Teachers has a bunch of members that are pretty much all public servants. And so they were like sort of a perfect group to go be super aggressive and sue the administration over trying to force reopening the IBR applications. Well, they're supposed to have a hearing over this. The court's kind of put some pressure on the administration, basically saying, hey, yeah, what are you doing? You know, get moving, open up something here, you know, put an online application back on the website, please, or something. So there was a little bit of initial success with this lawsuit. And in this hearing, the acting Undersecretary of Education, Bergeron, was replying on behalf of the Department of Education with the government's response to this lawsuit. And so he replied in the lawsuit response a bunch of different things that he was saying the Department of Education was acting upon based off of the Eighth Circuit's broadened injunction that came out a few weeks before. A lot of this stuff was just very vanilla stuff that made sense that they would say, right? Like, you know, they're saying they're expecting the SAVE plan to be overturned ultimately, and that's why they're redoing their systems to remove, you know, the interconnected nature of the SAVE plan from other parts of the applications and such. So that all makes sense. But the thing that really was alarming was there was a sub-item number 18 in there where they said, or Bergeron said, something in the order of, for ICR pay and IBR plans, Ed, as of mid-May, will instruct servicers to include all spousal income and spousal income from separated spouses for the purposes of calculating their income-driven repayment plan amount. And they said this is a required consequence of the Eighth Circuit's decision. So that was alarming. That was really alarming. And the reason it was alarming was because the IBR married filing separate rule is actually listed in statute, which is federal law. It's U.S. Code 20-1098, Section E, I believe, off the top of my head. And so it says, very specifically, special rule for married borrowers filing separate. It says, for the purposes of this income-based repayment calculation, if any borrower files separately for taxes, the secretary shall calculate their income-based repayment solely on the basis of their debt and adjusted gross income. So that's a statute. And then there's regulations that are supposed to conform and interpret the statute that come out, right? So the regulations have to conform to the U.S. code. And the regulations that President Biden did when it came to income-driven repayment plans were put out there, but they were supposed to be in line with U.S. code, right? And the courts are saying, hey, no, that's not in line with U.S. code with the Biden administration. And so I was quite worried that, okay, this new administration is sort of taking the interpretation that they can just take something away that's written in a statute. That's what I was worried about. The reason I was worried about it is because I know that you don't want to pay way more money on your student loans than you legally have to, right? And so that would have jacked up the payments, especially for married borrowers where only one spouse has debt. It would have probably more than doubled a lot of people's payments to an extraordinary degree. And some people wouldn't have been able to afford it. So that's why I was pretty concerned by it. And so I went on Instagram, we went on YouTube, we went on all the different social platforms, wrote a blog post about it. I went to work hard for you to try to bring attention to the problem because I guess, bear the sad distinction of being somebody that would read a full declaration of an undersecretary of education late on a Friday night and notice something like that, right? And actually, to be fair, one of my student loan borrower expert friends texted me first and said, is this real? ? And then I read the letter. I was like, oh my gosh, they are saying they're trying to eliminate married filing separate if I'm reading this right. And so I tried to have a little bit of a benefit of the doubt kind of interpretation where when I went on socials and I wrote the blog post, I just said, you know, there's one of two things happening here. Either Ed is trying to break the law and take away married filing separate, or somebody made an honest mistake. If it's the latter, I really hope they quickly reverse themselves to make it clear. Otherwise, there definitely would have been litigation. You would have seen another lawsuit over married filing separate access because it's written into the statute. But that could take many months to resolve, and borrowers would be left with even more uncertainty. So I was certainly hoping that that was not the outcome we were going to get. And very recently, the Department of Ed issued a corrective statement saying, oops, we didn't mean that borrowers have the spouse's income counted no matter what in their family size. Sorry, in their income-driven repayment. I kind of spilled the beans there. They are being counted only for the purposes of family size, regardless of their filing status. So essentially, that statement was a mistake. And what they meant is actually a good thing for borrowers, because what it means is that even if you file separately, you can now include your spouse in your family size calculation based off of the old rules that existed from before the Save Plan rule coming out. So that means if you each have student loans, your family size is 2. Before, with the Save Plan regulations, if you filed separately, you would have both each claim a family size of 1. Well, now if you file separately and you both have student loans, then you would both claim a family size of 2, and your family size counting would be for 2 people. You know, it might sound really exciting. I mean, I don't think that most borrowers that are just by themselves with no kids would file separately still, because filing separately is an expense. You have to pay more in tax prep fees usually, unless you're doing it yourself on TurboTax or something. You know, even if you do it yourself on TurboTax, you probably are making mistakes that you don't even realize you're making. Things like backdoor Roths, or things like allocating income properly in the community property state, or, you know, not losing out on the capital loss write-offs that you can put across both spouses or something like that. There's different things that our tax managers notice that whenever somebody thinks they're getting a discount because they're doing their own taxes, more often than not every case, of course, but more often than not, folks are costing themselves more money doing it themselves. I can certainly attest to this because my wife ordered this like marble coffee table that had to be assembled. And I think I did way more in healthcare damages to my body than we saved in having it shipped in a box. But that's an aside. So with this married filing separate stuff, I think that some folks are going to need to really pay attention even more if they should be filing separately for taxes. With this IDR extension on the recertification date, it's kind of confusing, right? So people are not being asked to recertify until February 2026 at the earliest. Now, that's only for people that are not switching plans. If you're going to need to switch out of the Save forbearance, you're going to need to file, you know, and use your tax returns to get on the different plan. You know, and even if they ask you to recertify using your income in, like, you know, July 2026, if you file an extension on your 2025 taxes, then you could still be using the 2024 tax returns. I think that I would pay a lot of attention to my filing status because of this announcement. I would be excited that married filing separate is confirmed for student loans for IBR borrowers in particular. We still do have to await the negotiated rulemaking session with the Trump administration and their Department of Ed picked people. They're going to go through the regulations that Biden did. They're probably all going to be overturned. And they're going to say, well, what do we want to interpret the rules as? You know, they didn't do this the first time around, which is a little bit nerve-wracking for folks that really are counting on forgiveness. Because if you think about negotiated rulemaking the first time, the Trump administration did not use their power at all. All they did was make a proposal that undergrads would pay for 15 years, grad students would pay for 30 years, and that's the only proposal they ever made. And then they just ignored the negotiated rulemaking session that they could have put together because they just kept the status quo. And then when the Biden administration came in, they were like, hold my beer, let's use negotiated rulemaking to make it so that the majority of all borrowers pay nothing on their student loans with no interest. And lo and behold, conservatives did not like that. And so then you saw these, you know, lawsuits from Missouri, other states as well, trying to block it. And so far, it looks like they're going to be successful. And not only is that income-driven repayment plan probably going to be blocked, Biden's entire overhaul of those rules is probably going to be blocked because the courts are not going to want to separate out what's legal and what's not with 400 pages of regulations, which means that in some ways we return to the pre-COVID state for student loans. But in other ways, we're not, because with Trump doing negotiated rulemaking, he's going to overlay his own rules on top of it. So in terms of why are there opportunities to save money? Well, if you think about it, we had old rules, then we had new rules of Biden. Now we're back to the old rules, which you have to know what the loopholes are. You have to remember what those old loopholes were. And luckily, we were doing this in the 2010s, at least half of the 2010s, we were doing student loan consults. Now you have to adapt what you know about the old rules to the new Trump rules, whatever those are going to be when they do negotiated rulemaking. You have to think about when the effective date's going to be on all that. So super confusing, super complicated, but I want to share some positives. The positives are Department of Education in this situation made a direct statement in violation of clear statute, and they took them a few days, but they corrected it. So at least for student loan purposes, this should be very encouraging, because if you're somebody depending on PSLF or IBR or something like that, well, there's proof that, you know, hey, they said something that, you know, they could have gotten away with until a court overturned it, but they made a statement that was a mistake, and then they, you know, issued a correction. That's exactly what you would hope for in any government agency, is if an official makes a statement that's, you know, in violation of the law, that instead of having to go with a months-long court process to get it corrected, the official just comes out on their own and makes a statement after 2 or 3 days saying, oops, I messed up. This is what I meant. That's exciting. I mean, that's good. That's positive. I know you might think, well, that's not very positive, but, you know, I'll take anything that's positive. The other big development the past couple weeks has been the House GOP continues to advance their $330 billion in cuts to student loan programs through their huge budget reconciliation bill that continues to get pushed forward. So we are getting fairly close to, in the summer, I think you'll see the Education Committee in the House start to really work on writing the legislative text of what their budget reconciliation proposal is going to be. And it could very well be the elimination of all repayment plans besides whatever one plan they want to do. The problem is the House and the Senate don't agree. And hopefully, what we expect is that this bill would only impact new borrowers and not existing borrowers. So existing borrowers would likely maintain access to IBR and those sorts of things. New borrowers, though, might have their options curtailed significantly. If the Republicans do the grandfathering in of existing borrowers under existing rules, they will receive not a ton of pushback from people on the student loan aspects of their bill. They won't get a lot of calls. They won't get a lot of emails. People will mostly just breathe a sigh of relief and say, well, at least I'm safe. Now, the higher ed education institutions would be apoplectic with some of these proposals of capping Grad Plus, which is their big cash cow, putting requirements on them for, you know, essentially kind of gainful employment rule type things, but for all schools instead of just for-profits, which is the way, you know, the Democratic administrations have done it, with where basically you have a lot of rules for for-profits and, you know, almost no rules for not-for-profits. The Republicans are almost kind of reversing that, right? Encouraging for-profit schools while just slapping not-for-profit schools all over the place lately, with like threatening to withhold funds and put certain departments under academic receivership, right? Like at Columbia, it's just kind of crazy. You know, I think that free speech is a good thing and different opinions are a good thing. And, you know, I guess, you know, the current administration is obviously has different views about some of that. The student loan piece that we need to be thinking about is like, if the House GOP goes after a lot of these schools really hard with capped Grad Plus and, you know, less generous IDR plans, they are attacking the finances of those types of institutions for the future. But current borrowers, if they leave them alone, then, you know, that would be hopefully probably a middle of the road. That would be my expected outcome, if anything. And some of their proposals might get curtailed a ton too. I mean, that's the other thing is, you know, we only have a handful of votes in the House, handful of votes in the Senate. You've got to commit some moderate members and some swing district members that will likely lose their seats to vote for this bill. And so, you know, I think that you might see a lot of this stuff get curtailed heavily. You know, the Senate hasn't even put forward cuts that they really want to do yet. I mean, they really are keeping their mouths really tight-lipped on this. You know, we just have to follow along with the legislative process this summer to see, you know, yes, Department of Ed follows existing statute. Well, what if the statute changes? Well, the only way the statute changes is if you get Congress coming with a new bill that can get a majority through the budget reconciliation process. Well, if they do that, then the budget reconciliation bills, in contrast to something that's got a filibuster-proof majority, the reconciliation bills that can pass by a party-line vote are having to be temporary in nature. They have an expiration date because of the process that they use to get around the filibuster. So that means if they do make a new IDR plan, that IDR plan might be like something that's around for like 5 years. And then a new administration, new Congress might come in and say, hey, we want to resurrect the SAVE plan temporarily through budget reconciliation, right? So, I mean, there's all kinds of things that you could see happen in the coming months. It's going to be a roller coaster, and it's going to be a roller coaster of emotions. And, you know, in some ways, I don't blame you if you tune in every now and then, because this week was a real gut wrencher, you know, to have a loophole that's very important to a lot of borrowers that is written into the statute, like married filing separate, to have that yanked away. And then think about, oh my gosh, are we going to have to go through yet another court case over this? And then to have it come back like randomly in a, you know, a few days after they announced it was going away, it's very blood pressure raising. So sometimes I think to myself, gosh, am I shortening my lifespan a lot by being in this industry? I don't know. Maybe I am, but I do enjoy it. And I do enjoy getting to share my insights with you. And I hope you enjoy them too. If you have any questions you want to leave in the pod, studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. We've got a big backlog there that I got to get to. So we'll probably do some listener episodes here in the near future. If you have need of a student loan plan, you know, studentloanplanner.com/book. You can get a consult from us. It's a great time to get a backup plan in general, just with all the stuff with married filing separate. The married filing separate rules actually changed from a lot of this recent announcements from the Department of Ed. People still need to be thinking through, when do I switch off of the save forbearance? When is the right time? You know, is there a right time? How does that interplay with how I file my taxes and when I file my taxes, et cetera? So still a lot that we can help with. Also, PSLF buyback evaluations, you know, figuring out, you know, what if any amount you're eligible for there, how much you should be able to buy back and what amounts would you need to pay. So there's all kinds of things that we can do to help folks out there. On the planning side, of course, if you work with us in financial planning, just reach out to your planner. Thank you all so much for listening to another episode of our Student Loan Planner podcast, and I hope you have a great rest of your week. Are you on the free Student Loan Planner email list? If yes, you can upgrade your experience and discover student loan loopholes so good, they might get repealed if I talk about them publicly. Find out my very best thought leadership that I really just can't be super open about anymore, unfortunately. If you want to get our very best tips, not just the ones that I can share for free, go to studentloanplanner.com/insider to get a special discount for your year membership. That's studentloanplanner.com/insider and get our very best dozens of bonus content and tips that's going to save you money and get you out of student debt faster. And if you're already an SLP insider, please reply back to those emails and let me know how I can make it even more valuable.